Tennessee football took part in spring practice scrimmage number one on Saturday. Who stood out? Who won the scrimmage? All that and more here on your Monday, Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into it. This is Locked On Vols, and I'm your host, Eric Kane. Appreciate you guys for hanging out with me here today, making this show possible. It's Locked On Vols. It is your first listen each and every day. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find Locked On Vols anywhere you get your podcasts. Please go ahead and subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey app, all that good stuff. Plus, we're on YouTube as well, and a subscription to the YouTube channel, Locked On Vols, would mean the world to me. So if you haven't already, even if you're not much on YouTube, but you do have an account, please go ahead and subscribe to the Locked On Vols YouTube channel. That does a whole lot for me, and it makes this show possible. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us here today. We're going to recap scrimmage number one, what we know coming out of Tennessee's, that was the seventh practice, if you will, from Saturday. What we know, I'm going to tell you what I know here on this show. In segment two, Barrett Silley, our friend over at CBS Sports, he came out with an article a couple days ago. One question for each SEC team that they got to get answered in spring. We'll tell you what he says about Tennessee and some others. And then we'll talk a little baseball in segment three. I think the baseballs are deserving of some conversation. Of course, fell in the series-wise, 2-1 at number one LSU, but some frustrating thoughts leaving that series, but overall some good things as well, and we're going to discuss that and where the baseball team is here at this stage of the season. That's coming up in segment number three. So first and foremost, we kind of talked about leading up to the scrimmage last week that the defense would likely win. Number one, the defense early on in fall camp, early on in spring practice, all that type of stuff. Defense is usually ahead of the offense because though you do have your responsibilities and gap integrity and pass coverage drops and all that type of stuff, and you're not just going out there and playing football, you have responsibilities, it's still reactionary, right? You are still reacting to what you are seeing in front of you. You are reacting to what the guard back to the running back is doing in terms of reading that triangle. You're reacting to the end man on the line of scrimmage, all that type of stuff, right? Offensively, you're running a set play, but also it's about cohesiveness with the guy next to you, that chemistry, the timing between quarterback and receiver, all that type of stuff. And that's the type of stuff you're still trying to get worked out, you know, early on in camp. And so I guess a long way of saying defense being ahead of the offense, that is A-okay. That is normal, especially in spring practice, right? But that was the case. The storyline coming out of scrimmage number one was defense. And remember, guys, as part of the media, we're not permitted to be there. I think in the last, 10, 15 years, Tennessee has not allowed media to sit down and watch practice or practice in scrimmages. Way back in the day, I've heard stories, and I can only imagine, what would it be like me being a part of that media group back then. But way back in the day, you could sit back there and watch all of practice, all day, every day. You couldn't report on some specific areas of practice, but it was common for, practice to be open, and you go and you watch that every single day. And fall scrimmages, fall camp scrimmages, spring practice scrimmages, you go out there and Bud Ford, a former SID over at Tennessee, longtime sports information director at Tennessee, he'd print off stats for scrimmages. I mean, what? Like, I can't even imagine. Like, if I get, who caught a touchdown or, who rushed for a touchdown or maybe had an interception, that's a win in my book, covering this Tennessee team nowadays in terms of spring scrimmages and fall camp scrimmages. So, man, I can only imagine what it was like back then. But from all the conversations that we have been told from people, who were there or within the program and all that type of stuff, and everything that I've been told, I've talked to a couple different people. It was defense. And again, that is okay. The offensive line is struggling, right? I mean, you're trying to figure out how to replace Darnell Wright. You're trying to figure out how to replace Jerome Carvin, one of the tackle spots, one of the guard spots. You did not have Cooper Mays, who scrimmaged on Saturday. And, we talked about it on the show last week. He's a bit banged up right now. Nothing long term. It's going to be okay. But he set out. He was extremely limited. So you essentially didn't have three of your guys who were on that offensive line last year that led the nation in scoring, right? That blocked for the nation's number one offense. And of course, it's nothing new trying to replace Darnell Wright and Jerome Carvin. Those guys are out of the program, and you know they've been gone, and they've not been in the plans here, of course. But it's still, you know, evolving. It's still there's still many layers to those competitions. I think John Campbell is your left tackle. I do. And I think it's Gerald Mincy, J.J. Crawford, who have flipped back over to the right side. Gerald Mincy really taking part in the right side of the offensive line for the first time in my, at least from what I've been told to my understanding, first time in his career playing on the right side. But I've been told that it's Gerald Mincy, it's J.J. Crawford, and Dane Davis trying to win that right tackle spot. And it's John Campbell on the left side, which is where he started 11 games for Miami last season. It's a lot of veterans at the guard spots right now. Ollie Lane, Jackson Lampley. You still got a little Andre Kirik, the transfer coming in from Texas. He's still working in there. The guard position, to my knowledge right now, it's still open for sure right now. So that's going to, I mean, that was not going to be settled leading up to or leaving scrimmage number one. So, you know, here in the offensive line, it was not the best, but of course, you know, that's expected. That's not to say that the defensive rush was, you know, much, much better, but they were taking advantages of those lapses, if you will. Heard Joshua Josephs had a really, really strong day at the edge. He's physically a little bit bigger. He's feeling out more, and that's good for him because he probably shouldn't have played as much as he did last year, but he was further along. He's smart, and he knew the system, and that put him in a position to go out there and play. His body's going to continue to fill out, and he's going to get bigger and stronger, and that's going to help him a lot. But heard that Joshua Josephs looked pretty good in scrimmage number one. You look at the quarterback play. Sure, it's not like the offense was terrible, at least from what I've been told. Quarterbacks played clean. They didn't turn the football over, and I think that's big. I was told that Joe Milton had a couple of really nice passes. The tight ends were involved in the passing game, which is really good to hear, right? And it's kind of expected, too. Dante Thornton was extremely limited. I think he dressed out, but he didn't play. Of course, he's still trying to nurse himself back from a hamstring injury. But when you're breaking in a new quarterback and some receivers and all that, you want to go to a safety blanket. And a lot of times a tight end is used as a safety blanket, not necessarily in Josh Heupel's offense, but really just in football overall. But it was good to hear that the Jacob Warren and McCallum Castles, Ethan Davis, I didn't hear his name an awful lot, but it was good to hear the tight ends being active and involved in the passing game on Saturday. That was awesome. I was told that Joe Milton threw a skinny post on a rope to Jacob Warren for about a 40-yard gain, and that was a really, really nice throw. Heard that he also had a touch pass touchdown to Jacob Warren after that, and showed, again, some really nice touch on the ball, which is something that we've always wondered about Joe Milton. Sounds like Jacob Warren had a good day. McCallum Castles, I believe, caught a touchdown. I think it was from Nico Imaliava. I could be wrong on that, but I believe McCallum Castles did catch a touchdown, and he had a pretty decent day. Joe was solid from what I've been told. He had a lot of checkdowns. He did his RPOs correctly. Nico was okay. You know, still some growing pains, still a bunch of learning curves. And again, as Joey Halsley said at the beginning of spring practice, he told Tim Banks, let it rip, right? Because we want to make mistakes. We're not afraid to make mistakes right now, especially our young guys. Get them over with, make them learning experiences and all that type of stuff. Heard Nico was okay. He was solid again, but didn't turn the ball over, which is huge. Heard Dylan Sampson had a really, really strong day, broke a lot of tackles. That's really good to hear. Heard Deshaun Bishop had a good day, getting some action with the running backs. Remember, Jabari Small's not practicing this spring, offseason surgery. You've got Cam Seldon, who has been in a red non-contact jersey, so I would assume that he has been limited a lot in the contact stuff. So it's been a whole lot of Jalen Wright, Dylan Sampson, and Deshaun Bishop. And heard Deshaun Bishop, you know, had a pretty good day in scrimmage number one. So that was really, really good to hear. Let's see here. Let me go down my checklist here, see if I hadn't mentioned something yet. Quarterback, no turnovers. Freshman edge, Caleb Herring did not play in the scrimmage. He's dealing with a little bit of knee soreness. Don't think it's a big deal right now, but dealing with a little bit of knee soreness. We'll have to continue to evaluate his process as spring practice goes on. I would imagine that they are going to be so cautious with that, but dealing with a little bit of knee soreness is the freshman Caleb Herring. And then you had your usuals that did not take part in practice and scrimmage because, you know, they're held out for the spring, like the Brew McCoy, Jabari Small, Brandon Turnages, you know, and a couple other ones as well. So all in all, Josh Heupel seemed pleased. He was proud of the progress that his team is making. Said there were some early flashes from Nico that you can just see it. And once it gets put together, it's going to be fun to watch. Happy about the no turnovers, but did acknowledge that defense did well in tackling in the open space. Good on third downs, and overall just winning the day, especially that first group defense. And again, that's not a shock because they were improved last year. I understand the secondary wasn't, but they were improved overall last year. But also, these are old dudes. So many veterans coming back. They've got so much experience on that side of the football. And so winning scrimmage number one is no shocker whatsoever. Tennessee will have scrimmage number two of spring practice on Thursday. We'll get the Easter weekend off. And they will be back on the practice field this morning. They will practice Wednesday, and then they will scrimmage on Thursday. And that is the football spring practice schedule for this week. But that's what I know. That's what I know in conversation. Some of the highlights of Tennessee in spring practice number one and the Orange and White game will be here in 2 weeks. So really, really looking forward to that. Hey, when we come back, one question every team in the SEC has got to get answered this spring. That's from Barrett Salee at CBS Sports. And that's coming up next right here on Locked On Vols. I want to tell you about our friends over at Built Bar. Hey, Built Bar March Madness bracket is continuing with the national championship tonight. We know you have a favorite bar or puff, and now is your time to make it count. Go to BuiltMarchMadness.com to vote for your favorites. You know, I'm always going to be voting for that cookies and cream bar. And if you want the Volunteers to win every single game they play on the courts, on the gridiron, whatever athletic venue it is, then you're going to be voting for that bar too, right? Support your team, support your favorite bar or puff. And when you vote for your favorite Built Bar or puff, you're going to be entered to win a drawing of 50 lucky Locked On listeners. They're going to get a free box of Built Bar. So you're going to be entered in 50 people who are entered are going to have a free box of Built, which is awesome. Not only that, but one lucky Locked On fan will win a 12-month subscription to Built, to Built's best bars and puffs delivered monthly straight to your door. How about that? You've got to try Built. What makes them so good? Well, for starters, all high in protein, low in sugar, covered in 100% real chocolate. That is right, real chocolate. Run to BuiltMarchMadness.com right now to cast your vote for your favorite bar or puff and pick up a box while you're there as well. That's BuiltMarchMadness.com for Built. Built Bars, they're awesome. All right, guys, we're going to talk a little baseball in segment number three, but I do want to talk some football here. An interesting story I saw over at CBSSports.com, and this is from Barrett Salee. We're going to get into that here in segment number two. Something I forgot to mention at the top of the show. Hey, Twitter Tuesday, mailbag edition of the show. Any questions you guys have, spring football, recruiting, baseball, basketball, all that type of stuff, anything that you just want to ask me about, literally whatever, I'll do my best to answer it. I might not have a great answer for you, but I'll try my best to answer it. So get in those questions at underscore Kaner, at Locked On Vols, and I'll do my best to check the comment section on YouTube. I can't get all of them, but I do my best to look there as well. So mailbag questions coming up tomorrow for Twitter Tuesday. Barrett Salee, CBS Sports. One question each SEC team must answer during spring practices ahead of the 2023 college football season. We'll start with Tennessee. And it's no shock. His question for Tennessee that they got to get answered, who will replace Hendon Hooker? Well, all of us here that's kind of entrenched and is up to speed on the day-to-day of that college football program. A lot of you guys by listening to Locked On Vols, thank you so much. We know that this is going to be Joe Milton, okay? But from a national perspective, you've got Nico, who was the number one recruit in the nation per On3, five-star quarterback. You know, he's in here as well. So obviously from the from a national standpoint, it looks like there's going to be kind of a quarterback competition. Same thing at Texas. You have Quinn Ewers, who is still there, and the reigning starting quarterback for the Texas Longhorns. But then you have Arch Manning. As I've spoken to many people in Austin and covering that program, it's kind of that same situation. Very similarities, alarming, you know, between the two UTs. Of course, you know, this shade of orange is the actual orange, but nonetheless, not that burnt orange down there in Texas, right? The Longhorns. But anyway, it's kind of the same situation. Ewers is the projected starter. That's what everyone believes is going to happen. Arch going to sit, learn, watch, and then take over, right? And that's kind of what Nico is here. But that doesn't mean that it's all set in stone, right? I mean, Joe's still got to go out and solidify it, which I believe he will. But from a national perspective, it's a quarterback competition. So here with CBS Sports, Barrett Salee for the question for Tennessee, who will replace Hendon Hooker? That's what he says. Michigan transfer Joe Milton III beat out Hooker for the starting job for the Volunteers prior to the 2021 season, but was benched in place of Hooker after just two games. Well, he also had an injury as well. But with Hooker gone, it's safe to say that Milton is the front runner for the top spot on the depth chart after throwing for 251 yards and three touchdowns in the Orange Bowl win over Clemson. However, freshman stud Nico Iamaliava might have something to say about that. Iamaliava, five-star prospect. They say number two overall player in the 2023 class. I'm not sure what CBS is. Oh, CBS, that's 247. at On3, he's number one. Is the future of the Volunteers offense under Josh Heupel? Milton will have a big say in determining whether the future is now. Well, of course he will. So that is the big question for Tennessee. And obviously we know that's a big question. Quarterback, most important position in all the sports. Hardest position in all of sports is cornerback. We discussed that, right? At least that's my opinion. I wonder if that'll be a good question of the day. What's the hardest position in all of sports? I think it's cornerback, but the most important is quarterback. And that's not just football, that's every sport. Anyway, maybe catcher is in that conversation, the hardest position in all of sports because it's just the durability. Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked here. We can talk about that another day. That is the question for Tennessee. And duh, you know, it's who's going to replace Hendon Hooker? He was a Heisman, it should have been a Heisman finalist. But we believe it's going to be Joe Milton. And so far, there's no indication that the job is not going to be his. In fact, I think that he's feeling pretty comfortable about being Tennessee's starting quarterback, but also motivated. This is Joe Milton's team right now. He has taken up a huge leadership position with the absence of Hendon Hooker. He's become more vocal. He talked to us, you know, last week or maybe it was 2 weeks ago and just said, hey, you know, I'm not the most vocal guy, but I've become more vocal. Also, I'm big, so I'm a little intimidating. And so I thought that was kind of funny. What are some other questions Barrett Salee poses for teams around the SEC? For Alabama and for Georgia, it's what will the offensive scheme look like? And he says, well, it'll be easy to say who the quarterback's going to be because Bryce Young's not there. And of course, Stetson Bennett's not there. But for each individual kind of paragraph here, he says, you know, for Alabama, a new offensive coordinator, Tommy Reese from Notre Dame, he runs the football to set up the pass, which is kind of the inverse of what Bill O'Brien did, which is pass to set up the run. Also, Jalen Milroe, dual threat, or is it Ty Simpson who's more of a pro-style quarterback? I believe it's going to be Ty Simpson, going to be the starting quarterback for Alabama, barring some drastic measure, maybe a second transfer portal guy that gets in there and gets his grades up and they can go to Alabama and enroll and be ready to start the opener. I mean, that's highly unlikely at this point, right? I think it's going to be Ty Simpson. Over at Georgia, essentially he says, you know, Todd Monken has gone on to the NFL's Baltimore Ravens. Mike Bobo comes in, and he did lead the Georgia offense for former quarterback Aaron Murray, who was the SEC's all-time leader in passing yards. And he's also got a great, you know, cupboard of quarterbacks right now to work with Carson Beck, Brock Vandergriff, Gunnar Stockton. What's that offense going to look like with new leadership and, of course, a new quarterback? So those are the biggest questions for two of the league's best teams in Alabama and Georgia. For Arkansas, it's can the pass defense be fixed? For Auburn, it's who's going to be quarterback. But, of course, you got dual threat Robbie Ashford. You got veteran TJ Finley. You've got a couple other guys in there as well. That's been the same story for the last couple of years for Auburn, right? For Florida, is Graham Mertz the guy? Well, my question is, if Graham Mertz isn't the guy, who the hell is, right? I mean, are you going to start Jack Miller, maybe? I mean, that's the only other name I recognize at quarterback on the roster for Georgia, because the whole Rashada situation, who he's now, where is it, UCLA, is that right? You know, signed, left, got out of his got out of his national letter of intent, and now I believe he's at UCLA. Again, if it's not a Tennessee recruit, I don't really pay attention, but of course that was a huge, huge story in the world of sports and name, image, and likeness. But Graham Mertz better be the guy. He was okay at Wisconsin, but if you're Florida, gosh, you better hope that he's the guy, because if he's not, I mean, whew, it is not going to be great. For Kentucky, it's will the Wildcats run the dang ball? And I didn't realize this, but Barrett Salee says that, you know, for a team like Kentucky that wants, you know, ran the ball so well in the SEC, they were next to last in Mississippi State in rushing last year, which Mississippi State doesn't even try to run the football, or at least it didn't under the late, great Mike Leach. You have Kavasi Smoke is gone, C-Rod, Chris Rodriguez is gone, and I understand they had their injury situations last year, but the question for Kentucky is, will they run the ball? For LSU, can Jaden Daniels become a superstar? It's a good question, because I think that's a really, really good, I think it's a good quarterback, I think it's a good storyline, and in contention, obviously, with Jefferson of Arkansas, with it's got to be Rattler of South Carolina right now. It's got to be, obviously, I'm having a mind blank. My guy, I love him, the quarterback of Mississippi State. He's been there for a decade. Anyway, I'll remember it in 2 minutes, but that's my guy. I mean, him and, of course, Joe Milton. Those are probably the most well-known quarterbacks in the Southeastern Conference right now, right? There's been a lot of turnover, and I think the quarterback position is a little underwhelming right now. But it was like this a couple years ago, and then we became household names, and we knew who they were. And that's kind of the beautiful thing about college sports, right? We'll go on. Mississippi State's who is Zach Arnett, who, of course, is taking over for the late, great Mike Leach. You've got Missouri. Can Luther Burden emerge as a true superstar? Remember Luther Burden, former five-star wide receiver? He was overshadowed by Dominic Lovett. Dominic Lovett now at Georgia. Wonder if Luther Burden can step up and solidify himself as one of the best wide receivers in the SEC at Missouri this year. That's the question for Missouri. Ole Miss, who emerges as the front runner in a loaded starting quarterback competition? No joke. I mean, Barrett Salee kind of compares this to the Hunger Games in a sense, right? You got Spencer Sanders coming over from Oklahoma State, who I think should and will win the quarterback job. You bring in Walker Howard from LSU to compete with Jackson Dart, who's returning. I mean, goodness gracious, right? South Carolina, where's the rushing attack? Tennessee, we talked about that. A&M, will the Bobby Petrino experiment work? Spoilers, it won't. You heard it here first on Locked On Vols. Actually, you didn't hear it here first. I'm sure that's been said countless times. But the Game of Thrones chess match with Jimbo Fisher and Bobby Petrino, with that offense, calling plays and all that type of stuff, game planning, yeah, get real. That's not going to work. And then Vanderbilt, how will the Commodores fix their pass defense? That is a good question for Tennessee as well. Tennessee just one spot ahead of Vanderbilt in the SEC in terms of pass defense. Vanderbilt finished 128th in the nation in pass defense last year. Some good stuff there. But as far as Tennessee is concerned, the one question that Barrett Salee asked about the Volunteers, how are you going to replace Hendon Hooker? The answer right here, it's Joe Milton. It's going to be Joe Milton. And there's no shockers or spoilers there. When we come back, we're going to close our Monday show. We're talking a little Tennessee baseball. Hey, big-time series down on the Bayou this past weekend. How do the Vols look despite losing the series 2-1? I'll tell you all that and more coming up next right here on Locked On Vols. All right, guys, welcome into it. Your Monday show, going to conclude here talking a little baseball. Remember, Twitter Tuesday, that is coming up tomorrow. Any questions, comments, concerns about Tennessee football recruiting, basketball, baseball, all that good stuff. Anything you want to ask me about, whatever it is, it can be about my life, can be about literally anything, @_Kaner, @LockedOnVols, and comment on the YouTube channel. Appreciate you guys for hanging out and taking part in Twitter Tuesday. It's a fun segment I do each and every week, and I really do enjoy it, so get in those questions. Don't be shy. Tennessee baseball, and a lot of you guys are probably going for the pause button or going to turn it off right now because you just don't care about Tennessee baseball. And it's not that you're not a Volunteer fan. It's just college baseball is not that popular. Hey, I was right there with you a couple years ago. But I'm a baseball fan. I wasn't watching Tennessee baseball because they weren't very good and because college baseball is not what college football and basketball is, obviously. But things change, right? In my line of work, I'm now tasked with covering the baseball team, which is fun because they're good. They're entertaining. Last year was a superstar season, right? That fell short of the World Series. A year before that, they went to the World Series. So it's been fun. I do encourage you, though, if you're reaching for that pause button or going to go hit up another podcast, just hear me out here for 6 minutes. Let's talk a little Tennessee baseball because those guys do deserve some attention as well. And the guy, for the guys that's, you know, have laid it out before them, guys that put in the work, like Luke Lipsius, Evan Russell, Jordan Beck, Drew Gilberts, Ferguson, Liam Spence, Andre Lipsius, all those guys that came before the team right now have really put this team in national significance. And the conversations are, well, were they overranked to begin the season? Absolutely they were. You know, you had Tennessee being ranked second by, you know, three national polls, top 10 in a couple. Absolutely they were overranked. And Tony Vitello would have told you that as well. End of the day, for those of you guys that know nothing about Tennessee baseball right now, Tennessee returned All-American starters, starting pitching, which is fantastic. The bullpen has a lot of juice, which is great, and you saw that on display this past weekend. But for the 1-9 in the order, you're replacing every single everyday starter, literally. There were some part-time players here and there, some platoon options, some guys who played before getting injured, some guys who filled in as DH, sure. But everyday starters from last year's record-setting 59-7 season, all gone. So you don't just replace all that and everything's hunky-dory, right? You're going to go through growing pains, and it's frustrating because you're losing games that you could win. you're losing games. You know, right now Tennessee is 21-8, I believe. Let me check that. Double check that. Tennessee is, it's not updated right now. Tennessee's not updated the schedule on top, but they are 21-8, and they are 4-5 in conference play right now, I believe is the exact number. Anyway, but the games that they've lost, if we think about it, at Grand Canyon out there in Arizona, Boston College, a midweek game, couple of games this past weekend, it's because of self-inflicting errors, okay? And what I mean by that is, sure, defensive mind gaps and whatever you want to call it, lapses in the field, whether it's an error or not, or base running blunders where you run into outs on the base pass when somebody comes in and hits a home run behind you, and it could have been a 2-run shot instead of a 1-run shot. Hello, Hunter Ensley, game 2 against LSU this past weekend. Inconsistent starting pitching, sure, that's been some things here this weekend or this year. But overall, let's talk about this LSU series. LSU is number 1 in the country. LSU has the best offense in the country, and it's got 2 studs on the mound as starters for Friday and Saturday, okay? I understand this past series was Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. In fact, this upcoming series for Tennessee, no midweek this week. Tennessee will take on Florida back at Lindsey Nelson Stadium beginning Thursday, and then they'll play Friday and Saturday as well. But LSU is good. LSU, you know, Lane Kiffin self-proclaimed the Portal King, right, in football. LSU, the Portal King in college baseball. They went out and got Paul Skeens, who Tennessee was in on, a catcher and pitcher from Air Force. He has gone on to LSU, focused just on pitching, and he is a top 10 prospect, and he's incredible. They went out and got Tommy White, who might be better known as Tommy Tanks from NC State. He's their new third baseman. Of course, you have Dylan Cruz, who is going to be a top 10 pick, maybe number 1 overall if it's not Paul Skeens this coming up June. He's incredible. You've got guys like Gavin Dugas and Trey Morgan who've already been there. LSU is good. And Tennessee goes down there, and it's a 2-2 game on Thursday in the 8th inning. And Tennessee didn't have its best stuff from Chase Dolander, but he found a way to get out of jams and give Tennessee an opportunity to win. Hand the ball over to Seth Halverson, who was fantastic coming on and pitching the rest of the game and put Tennessee in a position to win. But it is 2-2 in the bottom of the 8th inning. And there's a chopper hit over to first base. You got Blake Burke going to fielding it. Seth Halverson comes in and is going to cover the first base bag. He's there. He drops the ball. Crucial error. Next hitter comes up, hits a ground ball, and it's a speed demon. Hits a ground ball to Christian Moore at second base. Moore tries to make a tag on the runner when it's unneeded whatsoever. All you need to do is field the ball cleanly, throw to first, you're out of the inning. He tries to tag the runner going from first to second, misses. By the time he gets the ball to first base, it's too late. Everybody's safe. That does not go down as an error. It's a statistically, you can't rule that an error. You just can't, right? So you got 2 ducks on the pond, and then LSU explodes for 3 runs in the bottom of the 8th inning and goes on to win 5-2. So it's a game where your ace, Chase Dolander, who also will be a top 10 pick, it was like a minor league baseball series this past weekend, especially Thursday night. You had your ace in Chase Dolander, who wasn't his best self, but put you in position to win the ball game. But your defense is the reason you lost. Who's to know what would happen if you go to the top of the 9th inning? Tied 2-2. Who's to know? Tennessee could have still lost that game, but your defense lost you that game Thursday night. Fast forward to Saturday, right? And it's Chase Burns. And you've got essentially 4 consecutive doubles, or 4 doubles in the first inning. They're just pounding Chase Burns. LSU's hitting 4 doubles in the first inning. And the last quote-unquote double was a sky-high pop-up, center of the diamond in the infield, okay? Right over the pitcher's mound, and you have all the Tennessee infielders converging on it, and maybe they were yelling, Tony said after the game, but you couldn't really hear, they were communicating or whatever, but anyway, they let it flop, right? They let it hit the grass, and everybody's safe, and the batter's at second base. Statistically, that goes down as a hit, but it is a mental error by Tennessee. Go on, and that's the 4th run of the inning. You come up in that bottom of the 2nd inning, or bottom of the 1st inning, whatever it was, or top, Tennessee comes to bat. I've slept since then. Tennessee comes to bat. Dylan Dreiling gets on the base pass. He's immediately picked off. Hunter Ensley comes up, hits a home run. That would have tied the ball game at that point in time. So just stuff like that, right? Later in the game, Christian Moore can't bring in a pop fly on the infield. And yes, I know wind was an issue, and wind kind of got away from LSU a little bit in Sunday's game. I get that. But at the end of the day, these are plays you got to make, right? Especially against really good teams like LSU. So missed opportunities, like early in game two, caused Tennessee to get behind early in that one. And then, of course, LSU goes on and they just rake for extra base hits. Of the 12 hits for LSU in game two, 9 of them were for extra bases. 2 home runs and 5 doubles off Chase Burns, who didn't have his best stuff. He's a great pitcher. He wasn't good enough to win on Saturday or on Friday. And that happens, right? Then you go on to game three, and Tennessee just unloads all its frustrations. 6 runs in the first inning, 4 runs in the second inning. Drew Beam is getting big out after big out whenever they put some ducks on the pond there early on. And then you have Drew Beam airmail a throw to first base, much like he did in the Missouri series. What happens after that? LSU goes on to score 4 runs in that inning. Cuts the deficit to a 10-6 at that point in time. That was as close as it was ever get. Tennessee would win the football game, low-scoring football game, Iowa football game, if you will, 14-7. But it's frustrating because you sit here and you acknowledge that LSU is the best team in the country right now. And you were just a couple plays away from sweeping the best team in the country on the road. It was a heck of a baseball series. It was. And credit Tennessee for continuing to fight and fight and fight and finding a way to get something before going home, right? Didn't want to go home empty-handed. Tennessee got excellent, excellent relief pitching from Seth Halverson, from Andrew Lindsay, and from the host of guys who did it on Sunday. Tennessee was fantastic in a lot of areas this weekend, but also base running mistakes, defensive errors, and inconsistent starting pitching against the best lineup in baseball right now. That's the frustrating thing about it whenever you leave Baton Rouge, knowing you could have swept them potentially. Great measuring stick series. That's what I've been calling it last week for Tennessee. You know you can hang with anybody. You know you can beat anybody, but you got to fix yourself, because when you self-implode, when you shoot yourself in the foot in games like that, you're going to lose. But overall, I like the way Tennessee battled this weekend. It doesn't get any easier. You're hosting Florida this weekend. You're on the road at Arkansas the next weekend. You come back, you host Vanderbilt. Hey, life in the SEC, right? I'll have plenty more at VolQuest.com. My 3-2-1 will come out later today. That's over at VolQuest.com. Appreciate you guys for hanging out with me here today, catching up and hanging out. Don't forget, Twitter Tuesday, your mailbag edition of the show. That is coming up tomorrow. So get in your questions, your comments on Tennessee football, recruiting, basketball, baseball, whatever you want to ask me. @_Kaner. Those DMs are open. Tweet me @LockedOnVols or leave a comment in the YouTube section. Guys, I appreciate you for making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day. National championship for college basketball. That's tonight. Make Locked On College Basketball your second listen when we get done here, right here on Locked On Vols. Appreciate you guys. Same time, same place. We'll do it again for the mailbag edition of the show. That's coming up tomorrow. This is Locked On Vols.